Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. I almost forgot what a very original and non-basic intro tagline at all that I have, but we are back, baby. After a short but not so short hiatus to recover from yet another heart-throbbing, heart-stomping end to the Premier League season, I am your host, James, joined by league champion Kyle Man City Lee and third place returning to the Champions League, Sean Liver Larkin. Other than the fact that City has won the league for a record-breaking four straight seasons now, and my life expectancy decreasing significantly, how have you boys been over the last few weeks? I've missed you and missed the opportunity to talk a little footy with everybody.
Nah, you've just been avoiding this topic, James. This is the glorious podcast we got today. I mean, everybody's favorite team won the Premier League. I'm ready to get right into it. I mean, we've been trying to get this pod going for, what, 2-3 weeks now? And they just keep postponing it, gentlemen. But
Just about. Every time we start to kind of talk about it in the group, I get a little teary-eyed, and then I get choked up, but and then I just throw my phone out the window.
James, like Thanos said, this is inevitable. It's coming. So let's get it going.
All right, Tony Stark Larkin, how can we correct this blip next season, and how are you feeling?
I'm good, man. I've mourned the loss of Jurgen Klopp and his departure from the Premier League. I think like 70% more people watched his departure than Man City's trophy lift because it's just gotten so boring and played out at this point. Yep. As Kyle said, it is basically become inevitable that they're going to win. They win player of the season with Phil Foden, top scorer with Haaland. You know, whoop-de-doo, no one cares.
Yeah, it's I care. It is a bit inevitable. I mean, well, you didn't, you know what, Kyle, I don't want to say you're a bad friend, but you're a horrible friend. You did not do one single wellness check. Whoa. Not one wellness check on Sean or I during this time.
No.
Hey, it's all right. We'll survive. There's a few people, as always, we're not changing anything up yet until season three commences, but season two is still going strong. We'll have a couple more episodes. We'll have some more spotlights, but we're going to keep the same kind of game plan that we do at the end of the season. We got some great hot news coming over to you guys right now. The majority of it is going to be around coaching. Coaching at the end of the season and during the summer transfer window is just as exciting for coaching staff changes as well as actual transfers for players. So the one and only Gaffer 101, Sean Larkin himself, is going to get us kicked off with Chelsea. So tell us a little bit about Pochettino and how he's parting ways.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, Chelsea, who's been pretty much a disaster for 85% of the season, turned it on late. They win their last six. They get into European football. It is the Conference League because United won the FA Cup, but it's still a relatively successful season considering how it started. Despite that, there's some disagreements on the direction of the roster. I think two of the big ones were Trevor Chalobah at center back and then Connor Gallagher in midfield, two players who were likely to be sold this summer by the club that Pochettino just viewed as much more important players to keep. So they have a parting of ways, and in comes Enzo Maresca, a 44-year-old Italian manager who was most recently with Leicester City, who obviously we talked about a couple weeks back, won the championship and are promoted back to the Premier League after one season down in the championship. A little bit about his background. He's a Pep Guardiola disciple, served as an assistant for Man City for a number of years, also coached the U23s. His first dive into management was with Parma in Serie B, and actually did not get them promoted. And then obviously this past season was with Leicester. He's known for being an absolute addict when it comes to possession. Very meticulous, very slow, deliberate build-up play, even more so than Pep. So they had crazy possession numbers. I think they were at 74% in the Premier League in the championship in terms of possession, which is crazy. So I expect, obviously, that that's going to continue at Chelsea. And I think that the main thing or main guy that he's got to get a tune out of is Enzo Fernandez. Mm-hmm. I think that he probably is most likely to benefit, and we'll see how that goes. But, you know, moving across the country into the Northwest, we have a little bit of an update when it comes to the Manchester United job as well.
Yeah, so we all thought that it was pretty set in stone before the FA Cup. And only a week before that did we think that Erik ten Hag would actually have a chance of saving his job if he won the FA Cup. And against all odds, they managed to do so. Unfortunate if you're a Chelsea and Tottenham Hotspurs fan, not really Tottenham Hotspurs, mainly Chelsea and Newcastle fan. But if you're Erik ten Hag, you went out supposedly in a bang. Now, Sir Ratcliffe, my new minority shareholder for Manchester United, did meet with one Thomas Tuchel over the last week. And supposedly he needs a break from coaching. Tuchel had a bit of an up and down roller coaster season with Bayern Munich as well. Obviously not finishing in first place, losing that to Bayern never losing, and then getting out of the Champions League semifinals to the victors Real Madrid, which is no fault to his own. But he did have a relatively good last bit of stretch of time with Bayern Munich. But I think he's been bouncing around a bit too much. And when Sir Ratcliffe was interested in bringing him back over to Manchester United, Tuchel has come out and said that he is off of the menu for coaching staff for Manchester United. Whether that's him just not trying to go from one hot seat to probably one of the least appealing hot seats in the English Premier League at the moment, or he actually needs a break, we won't know. But Erik ten Hag at the moment is still the coach by default. I'm sure we will see a couple more opportunities come in for coaching across the globe for Manchester United. It seems like Ratcliffe is pretty hell-bent on getting someone in there. But we will be talking more about that briefly and in depth through our next spotlight, which we will see the return of my good friend Brendan Heasley. And he'll talk about Manchester United as a whole, how he felt the season went. And I know he has some very, very strong opinions about keeping Erik ten Hag. So it'll be very interesting to hear from that. Other than that, keeping it with Bayern Munich, Kyle, your man somehow goes from being relegated with Burnley to becoming one of the world's greatest soccer team's coaches. And that is one Vincent Kompany.
Yeah, before we jump into that, I would just like to say, while on the Manchester United end, Ian, you better get your ass on this podcast. We had a bet going that if Manchester United won a trophy, you would come on this podcast. And I hate to break it to you, my friend, but Man City tanked that just so you would come on this podcast. So,
yeah,
you know,
the abuse you are going to receive is going to be quite astronomical.
It's true. It's true. But, you know, resorting back to Vincent Kompany, it's one of the most stunning moves that we've seen all year. Bayern Munich hire Vincent Kompany. Paying respect is saying a lot. I mean, $12 million for this manager is making him one of the highest paid managers in all of football. Does he deserve it? That is the big question. He has 4 years of managerial experience, two at Burnley, two at Anderlecht. Anderlecht, I mean, classic. But the you know, Burnley were relegated and they put up the fight, the good fight. It just wasn't enough. And all of a sudden, he is now coaching one of the biggest names in all of football. It's Bayern Munich. I mean, these guys should be a shoo-in to win that league every single year. You know, in the past, Bayern never lose, and as James likes to say, they're there. So this might be a change of the tides. But, you know, Jose Mourinho, he talked about it earlier this year. Vincent Kompany is a football romantic. He's committed to playing his style. I think this is going to be what separates him from the past to the present. I mean, we're looking at a guy who's been coaching 4 years, nothing great has happened, but the teams he's coached don't have the caliber player that he's used to playing alongside. So, you know, you look at the great team that he once played with, it's not there. So you give him the weapons, you know, Kane, Sané, you give him Bayern Munich, what can you do? He can play any style of football he wants at this point. Mm-hmm. So this will be the ultimate test, in my opinion. If he fails this season, he's not meant for coaching. Simple as that. This is, you have every weapon, you have an unlimited purse per se, and what can you do? So this to me is very exciting for Vincent Kompany. I'm not sure how it's going to end, but Sean, I know you had a strong feeling about this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think it's stunning to me. I understand obviously that he's a young coach. I just don't think it makes a ton of sense, but they also lost out on their probably top five candidates or top four candidates at a minimum. Nagelsmann sticking with Germany, Hansi Flick turning them down, deciding he wanted to go to Barcelona. So they approached a couple of other coaches. Obviously, Xabi Alonso would have been a top of their list as well, and he's staying at Leverkusen. So they went down to, you know, number five or six, and I do think there's some level of the football that they'll be able to play with the caliber of players They have it, it's more likely to be successful, but I think it's a team that's a bit in flux. It's stuck between rebuilding with some older players like Thomas Mueller. Obviously, you have Neuer's getting up there in age as well. Harry Kane's in his 30s. There's a couple of other players in addition to that. But then you also want to compete for trophies. They have some young players coming up as well. It's just, it's a difficult situation. And kind of like you said, Kyle, if he doesn't win the Bundesliga next year, he's immediately under pressure and on the hot seat, potentially even sacked. And then where does he go from here? But I guess, you know, based on the fact that he got relegated and got one of the five or six biggest jobs in the world, he'll probably end up being coaching like one of the giants of the Premier League this time next year.
Yeah, absolutely. He actually might just skip it. He might become FIFA president. We're not really sure what's going to happen there, but great.
Y'all be so lucky. Come on, Vincent Kompany. The man's got a statue. A statue. I mean, it's ugly. They botched it, but they still got the statue.
No, no, no. If it's ugly, then they
got it right.
It was accurate.
No, they gave him hair, bro. It's weird.
Well, good points, lads. Good points. We're going to be very excited to see what kind of development comes from that and the coaching. Sean, you make a good point that coaching or the gaffer pool is getting much, much smaller as time goes by, which is why you probably are seeing Manchester United having a difficult time with this, which is why Liverpool got their business done earlier in the year. And we'll continue to see it get depleted over the next year as well. Next year, we do have one team who will be looking for a coach more likely than not, and that is Manchester City with Pep Guardiola going into his final season with Manchester City. He's already come out and said that it's much more likely for him to not continue than it is for him to continue after next year's season. Now, that will either be forced or not forced, depending on the unfolding over the next couple of months. And what could I possibly be referring to? I could be referring to Manchester City
winning the Premier League.
They have won the Premier League, and now they are trying to somehow own the Premier League by suing them and biting the hand that has fed you. Now, I put here, I said, Man City, where should I point this gun? Oh, my own foot. That sounds pretty good. Yeah, let's go with that. Man City is suing the Premier League in a lawsuit for the governing Associated Party transaction. So the Times broke this news to us all first. Supposedly, it's been happening behind the scenes for quite a bit of time now. But it's just been leaked now through the arbitration or through the discovery period of this lawsuit that Man City has against the Premier League. And what the whole entire thing of this argument is that Man City is claiming that the rules imposed by the Premier League on preventing owners from funneling money into their own teams via sponsorships through affiliated companies, i.e., let's say the owner of McDonald's also owns Bournemouth. Bournemouth cannot go to McDonald's for a sponsorship for a $500 million for no reason. There has to be a fair market value to that. So what Manchester City is saying with Etihad as an affiliated sponsor, why can I not funnel all these funds into Manchester City if I am willing to do so? Well, that's their argument, and they're saying that they should be able to do that because of UK competition laws. They're saying that the Premier League is strictly violating competition laws, which I find ironic considering the fact that the competition, they have beaten six of the last seven times, so I don't really feel there's an infringement in competition there, so to be. But this is exactly what Man City are being tried for in November of 2024 this year, that the majority of their FFP or their PSR violations are due to the inflating of their Etihad sponsorships. So this is essentially just a we're going to strike first kind of tactic to kind of take the heat off of that November hearing and get it done a little bit quicker and see if they can establish the fact that the argument in November is null and void based off of the outcome for the next 2 weeks. So this broke last week. The first set of hearings or the trial, whatever you wish to call it, started today. And the Premier League did say that it should last about 2 weeks. So in about 2 weeks' time, we should hear the verdict. And that will have a massive, massive implication to the November 2024 hearing and potentially the shape and future of the Premier League and European soccer. So Kyle, just out of curiosity real quick, because I'm sure we'll all hear about this over the next couple of weeks, your thoughts and feelings. And then Sean, I want to get your quick 2 cents on this as well. So Kyle, as a Manchester City fan, do you not feel at all a bit strange, the fact that you're going based off of competition law, that you guys have won 6 out of 7 times?
I think Man City just needs to sober up, man. That they're celebrating the win too hard. This will all work out, I'm sure.
Sean, I'm sure Kyle wants to talk more about it, but what do you think about the whole situation that's going on and unraveling in front of our eyes?
I think there's some level of Man City getting out in front of that court case that you alluded to in November, thinking that they're probably going to get hit with some pretty nasty suspensions or levies or you know, whatever it may be in terms of punishments. But to me, it just the move of someone who's guilty and trying to change the rules before they can get charged with it. And it's shocking that the teams that backed, you know, proposal were Newcastle United, who's also owned by, you know, a nation state in Saudi Arabia, Everton, who's in breach of financial fair play. And then there's one other team I can't think of.
You had Chelsea and Aston Villa.
Okay. Yep. 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 Which makes sense too. Aston Villa's got a ton of money, but this will be their first time in Champions League in a long time, so they can't compete. And then obviously Chelsea just would love to spend money recklessly. That's their favorite. That's their favorite hobby. Yeah. They've replaced winning trophies with just spending money like a drunken sailor.
Blank checks out the wazoo. But good, we will keep you guys updated over the next couple of weeks on the progress of that. Definitely something that I think everyone should check out on their own as well. I think it's time, hopefully, that Man City kind of doesn't write their own cheat music and get sung to. So we'll find out. But that is not the point of this episode. We will be celebrating, Kyle, another victory for you, starting off here first with our report card grade for you guys. But it is that time of the season. We're a little bit later than we usually are, but it is report card time. So get your magnets ready for that fridge, because we're about to post some great grades and some really piss poor ones for your teams. So let's see if you're happy with the grades that we give everyone, or you're going to actually curl up into a ball in your bed tonight and wonder why you even watch the sport. So without further ado, welcome to class. So Sean and Kyle, of course, we're going to do this in a letter grade. Everyone gets 1 G. Otherwise, it goes from F to A. So feel free to dub someone off of the letter scale. But we are going to go A to F, and we're going to go from top of the league to the bottom of the league as per usual. So we'll kind of highlight a few ones that we had the largest discrepancies. Otherwise, we'll kind of just talk about our respective teams relatively briefly and get on with the report card. And first, of course, is the one and only four-time champion, repeat champion, back-to-back-to-back-to-back, six-time champion out of the last 7 years is Manchester City. So Kyle, we all across the board gave them an A. I can imagine why it's not an A+. It's just pretty much because when you win the treble the year before and you only win the English Premier League the next year, I don't think you can get the A+, but you can certainly get an A for your rating. So Kyle, how did you feel the boys in baby blue performed this season?
Yeah, you know, there's not much to say about it. They did fantastic. The second half of the season was where they really shone, I would say, where Pep Guardiola doesn't tend to let points up after Christmas break. I mean, he had to win. James, correct me if I'm wrong here, but that was 9 of 9 wins in their last 9 games.
Yeah, and I believe you guys went undefeated in 2024 in the calendar year.
And, you know, but that's what you have to do. And to win the league by 2 points after going undefeated in that calendar year, it goes, you know, to show about Arteta, obviously, to stay on his heel after an undefeated season. But, you know, you really can't be letting up points in the second half of the season when Guardiola's around. That's as simple as it is.
Yeah, it's a brutal sport, especially when you have a machine that is Manchester City and the ability. And to me, the most impressive thing was that you guys, although possibly this summer are going to lose some talent like Bernardo Silva, possibly Kevin De Bruyne. If I were you guys, maybe cash in a little bit on Haaland. That's a hot take, but I think you could cash in on him while he's going. But that's
no. Yeah. That's an absurd take. I mean, my goodness, Mr. Tesorero. That's just out there. Also, I will say this. I genuinely think De Bruyne will stay next season, but be gone afterwards. He's a disciple of Pep Guardiola. He and Pep have a phenomenal relationship off the pitch, where, you know, we've talked about it before once again, where Kevin De Bruyne had a very hard upbringing going from foster homes, many teams that he was not appreciated at, and Pep Guardiola gave him that chance. And I feel like there's a respect between the two of them where as long as one of them is there, the other will be there. But once Guardiola leaves, I don't see Kevin De Bruyne staying on this team.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin came out and said that he's got to keep all of his options open. Specifically, he gave a hint to the money that Saudi Arabia is throwing around there. So I wouldn't be shocked either if he moves. But I think you guys did some great business that we kind of talked about before the season with Vardiol. You brought in Doku, who is probably going to replace Jack Grealish, who's been kind of a $100 million thorn in the side of the Etihad. Who we could see leaving this summer as well. And then you even brought up or had a massive resurgence, obviously, of Phil Foden. I know that Pep Guardiola didn't play him as much as I think we all would have appreciated. But then you also have a couple homegrown heroes with Oscar Bob, our favorite, and Rico Lewis that are going to be able to segue into the position a little bit more in the future. So we'll see what names we have there. But an A across the board for the champions, Manchester City. Now, we had a up and down A-, and A-plus grade for Arsenal. Myself as a fan, I couldn't find myself to give them an A-plus, but can't find myself anything lower to give them an A. Kyle, you gave them an A-plus, and then Sean, you gave them an A-. I definitely would be lying if I say it doesn't pain me not to give this performance an A-plus, but we didn't win anything. And, you know, last year coming in second place, no trophies. This year coming in second place, no trophies. The only way to get that plus at the edge of your letter grade for me on this one is getting a trophy in the cabinet. I mean, we did have a fantastic, a totally non-shameful, totally top-tier performance of a year. We had possibly three players up for player of the season in Martin, Rice, and Saliba. Personally, I think Martin was probably the best contender for it out of the three. But you can't argue with Foden's numbers or Cole Palmer's at that point as well. Some really impressive players going up against. Regardless, the season that we had was nothing short of fantastic. We won 35 times in all competitions from 52 games. Our win percentage was 67.3, which is the highest of any Arsenal season on record. We had 28 victories, which is our best tally in the Premier League era. We picked up 89 points in the Premier League, our second highest total ever, only one shy of the 90 that we were able to achieve in the Invincibles year in 2003-2004. The 89 points would have been enough to win the title in 20 of the last 31 Premier League seasons, including last year. But we know that the competition has increased. But we've done this all while dominating teams offensively and defensively. We scored the most goals in Arsenal history with 91, including a wild stretch, which I think was my favorite part of the season. A wild stretch where we scored 2+ goals in 8 or more consecutive halves, which is the most in Premier League history. And then defensively, we were the best in the league with 18 clean sheets, 10 being from the more difficult away games as well. You throw in a Champions League quarterfinal, and I'm a happy camper. Not in love, but pretty smitten for sure with this season, and definitely no regrets. But that's all I have for my monologue for today.
Yeah, and I do want to highlight one player specifically with Saliba. I did read that he was the first Arsenal player in history to play 3,420 minutes of football in one Premier League season, which is 90 minutes for 38 straight games, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, insane. And you even coming off of a season where he lost him at the end, which is arguably last season, one of the reasons why we quote unquote bottled the league last year was that lack in defense. And, you know, it's hard to argue that because you have Saliba, and when we were getting, you know, Rob Holding in there as his replacement, there's just no comparison. But overall, I think a great year for Arsenal. Sean, I think you probably gave them an A- because they just did not win anything, is my assumption.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You talked about, obviously, 20 of the 33 years it wins you the league, or 31, whatever it is. But since Pep Guardiola has come in, the bar has certainly been raised. I think the big key for them is just getting a few more goals. Hmm. Every year except for one, Man City's gotten over 95 goals. I think they had one year at like 86, but they've broken 100 several times since Pep Guardiola has been in there. I just think that's the next level is scoring a few more goals, finding ways to turn those losses into draws and draws into wins. I mean, they won a ton of games. It's really more just the losses that they had. They had the most out of the top three with 5, you know, finding ways to get a point that the smallest of margins. I mean, they ended up losing the league by just 2 points. So it's a great season though, for sure. No doubt.
Yeah. And almost equally as impressive season, though, we have similar ratings across the board here. We have an A minus, an A, and A minus for Liverpool. So, Sean, why don't you take it away with your boys, your Scousers?
I think, the reason they were graded a little bit higher or equal to Arsenal and Man City is just the expectations. You had them in fourth this, preseason. I had them in third. I would say, Kyle, you had them as an A minus at the halfway mark. So they're basically, where we expected. I think they were the expectations raised after the start that they had. Being top around whatever that was, right after the festive period ended, maybe January 11th or so, they were top. Just a few missed opportunities. And then obviously later on in the season, they definitely fell back of that top two. Defensively, we'll need some work. That's the one thing I think Arnie Slot's definitely going to need to work on is the starts that they had. They fell behind in 16 games this year, so that's got to change. You can't be going down one up. That's just to go down 1-0, by the way. Not even mentioning games where they were at 1-1 and lost, or were ahead 3-1, I think it was, on Aston Villa, and ended up drawing that game. So definitely some work to be done, but a good season overall and a step forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to see where Arnie Slot can take them, just because we haven't seen a Liverpool side without Klopp in when I've really been a fan of the Premier League and focusing, to the T on them. I think the one thing for me for Liverpool is the stat they were in top four in every single positive team category. From touches in the opponent's box to corners to possession to accurate passes. But the only stat that I see haunting Liverpool is the big chances missed, with 79 taking the lead on that. Their main attacking threats underperformed their XGs besides the one and only Jota. What a god he is. I hate to hate him, but I have to. And then that's also not including McAllister, but you had Mohamed Salah, Darwin Nunez, Luis Diaz, and Cody Gapko all underperforming their expected goals, which I think is where, like you said, same thing with Arsenal. Can that one missed opportunity turn a draw into a win, or for turn a loss into a draw? It's picking up. But when we're playing with such fine margins at the top of the table like that, it's very difficult to cope with. But you did also have a lot of young talent get reintroduced into the lineup. I think personally, I think one of the best parts of the season as a football fan was the introduction to Connor Bradley. I thought he was a fantastic player to showcase the season for you guys, and looking forward to seeing what he can do over on that right side between him and Trent, maybe moving Trent to the center, but a really impressive young development team going. Another team that kind of shocked us all, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, but at the beginning of the season, I think we nailed it. I think we said that Villa is coming in. They look good. They are going to be dangerous. Even with what was a 5-2 loss or 5-1 loss against Newcastle on day one, they still looked so good. And and at the beginning of the season, I called them the new Brighton, meaning that we would be finding ourselves rooting for them for the entirety of the season just because of how they play. Now, obviously, I didn't realize they were going to break my heart twice, and that I don't want to like them at all, but I do have to give them a lot of respect, and it looks like we all did, with A pluses across the board for Aston Villa. Sean, you and I both had them finishing in seventh place, and clearly they outperformed that by finishing in fourth. What do you think about the Villains?
Absolutely. It's a tremendous year for them, highlighted by Ollie Watkins, 19 goals, and then also the top assister, winning the Playmaker Award in the Premier League. He was a key component of that. Also the high line that was played by Unai Emery, and Emi Martinez really fits that system like a glove, just a ton of sweeping up for that back line. It's a huge achievement for them to get top four. Obviously, it's hard to break in there. I can't remember the last team outside of the proverbial big six, besides obviously Newcastle last year, but previous to that, it probably was Leicester, right?
Yep.
When they won the league to get into the top four. So it's certainly achievement in its own right. I think they had a little disappointment in the Europa Conference League losing in the semis, but this is a huge summer for them. There should be an opportunity to add to that group, and then we'll see how they cope with Champions League football.
Yeah, we have heard rumors of one of their main stars, Douglas Luiz, not being able to stay with the team for profit sustainability reasons, that possibly having to sell their main guy or do a swap deal with Juventus for Weston McKennie and cash. But obviously that's just rumors and speculation at the moment. One thing we have to give Aston Villa their flowers, but one thing I will kind of point out here, that the underlying numbers for Villa were not overall that impressive. They only broke into the top six for goals per match, and the rest were ranked around, for all team stats, right around the 10 mark. You were eighth in big chances, seventh in expected goals, 10th in clean sheets, 9 in shots on target, and 16th in possession won in the final third. With that one's a bit of a more depending on how you play statistic, but you look at Manchester City, Arsenal, Liverpool, and their possession winning in the final third is extremely high. So playing a bit, I would say, out of their depth in that kind of is going to be interesting to see if they're able to maintain that type of, above average performances next season as well. But it will be interesting, especially with some more intense competition such as the Champions League. Kyle, anything to say about Villa before we move on to Tottenham Schittsburg?
Just the fact that they were consistent, man. I mean, we did the halfway hopes and horrors, and all three of us had them at an A+ halfway through the season, and we're all still at an A+. It was just a consistent season. They had a lot of superstars. Like you said, Douglas Luiz was a huge name first half of the season. He had 5 man of the matches in his first 18 games. And even when he kind of fizzles off, Watkins and other players pick up the slack. So this was a well-coached, well-devised team that did not let up. So good for them. They deserve to be where they are, in my opinion. And I'm excited to see what they have to do for Champions League football.
Yeah. Not to go unmentioned as well. We mentioned at the beginning of the season, but they did lose their captain and their best center back in Tyrone Mings for the entirety of the season. So to be able to perform at the level they did without such a key influential player is also relatively impressive. So well done. Now, I like to consider myself, a respectable Spurs hater. I give the banter as often as I can, but never overly egregious insults.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to the one and only Heung-min Song. But I am now forced to say that I am never going to say anything nice about that man ever again. I can't even really now work up the strength to insult the guy because he's so great and nice. But, from now on, I'm just going to pretend like he doesn't even play football, because I think we all know that he forgot how to play football on Tuesday, May 12th of this year. I mean, if Finding Dory was a live action movie, I think we found our useless just keep swimming, just keep missing blue flounder of a human fish star in Heung-min Song. But that's just my biasm on me. Other than that, I think they had a fantastic year. I think they had a great year. I think we all agreed on it. Sean, you and I give the Spurs an A. Kyle, you give them an A-. Why don't we do the same thing? Sean, what do you think? And Kyle, wrap it up.
Yep. So I had them at eighth in that league predictor, but when we had the benefit of seeing them play for 2 or 3 games under Postecoglou, I think we both revised that and said they were probably around fifth. So it's a very productive season. Obviously, they didn't get top four, which is the only disappointment, but step in the right direction. They have a good nucleus of guys, to build off of.
Yeah, I think the Australian listened to our initial few podcasts, or the preseason podcast, where we said where they needed to fix the spine of the team with a new goalie. With Vicario, he pittered off a little bit towards the end of the season, but Vicario was looking like the goalie of the season for the first half. And then obviously bringing in Madison, unfortunately with an injury with him and Mickey Vandervin at inopportune moments, it definitely hurt their chances. But Kyle, what did you think about the Hotspurs?
I mean, I thought they played very strategically. There were 7 teams that scored more goals, and there were 10 teams that allowed less goals. So, I mean, just based on that alone, you should not be in the top 6. If you're not in the top 6 for goals for, or for goals against, and you manage to finish in the top 6, that means that you got blown out during your losses and your wins were by 1 goal. So I thought it was efficient what they did. They held their W's to a W, and when they were losing, they fucking fell apart. So yeah, to stay in the top 6 after those numbers is impressive, in my opinion. That's why they're at an A-.
Yeah, agreed. Let me ask you guys one quick question. Yes or no? Do you think that Tottenham Hotspurs missed Harry Kane this season? Sean, we'll start with you.
No, I think they probably would have finished in a similar position. Maybe they would have gotten fourth, but I think it was the right move to move him on and rebuild, get a little bit younger. So they, I think it had to be done. It was the right move for both sides.
Kyle, would you agree?
I agree and disagree with Sean. I think it was the right move, but to say that the team wouldn't be better off with an all-star world-class player like Harry Kane, I feel like he's always going to elevate the team. And one thing that I genuinely think Tottenham Hotspur is missing is not only his striking, but his passing ability. His long passes and his vision to set Heung-Min Son, you know, they just picked up Richarlison, who I absolutely fucking hate. But yeah, he had a good season. But like, you know, if you have his passing ability up top, he threads the needle like no one else's business. So I genuinely think they missed him. But as Sean said, for not only Kane, but for Tottenham's future, you got to get rid of him. You got to start building the youth. You got to start relying on another striker.
Absolutely. All right, on to another London team. We spoke about them briefly before, slightly, but it's Chelsea. Across the board, we have another sporadic B minus and B plus. I actually called them at the beginning of the season coming in sixth place, so that's my first one correct. Sean, you had them finishing just slightly higher in fifth, and then Kyle, through the halfway hopes and horrors, you had them as an F. So obviously, their first half of the season, their second half were drastically different. Sean mentioned at the beginning of the episode with Pochettino leaving that he ended on a 5-game win streak that got them into European soccer over the course of those 5 games. It did look like it was going to be enough for Europa. Manchester United had different plans. I had them in sixth, but I had them getting to sixth in a much different way. I saw that the team was being developed at a youth level with a coach that had experience and that would be able to kind of build some momentum and get kind of an actual routine down. But they were the most sporadic team, I think, that we have seen over the season. And the only reason why they are where they are is because of who probably gave Phil Foden a run in for the player of the season. He won the young player of the year, and that is one Cole Palmer. I remember earlier in the season, I asked if he was overrated, if ice in the veins, Cole Palmer is just too much for right now. And he rose to the occasion. Kyle, let's start with you. And then Sean, we can end it with you. But Kyle, what did you think about the second half of Chelsea season? Because you rated them so poorly at the halfway hopes and horror.
I mean, I still have the lowest rating out of the three of us for him. Granted, they did win their last 5 games, which, you know, if you're a Chelsea supporter, if you're even a Chelsea player, you should not have to rely on 15 points out of your last 5 games to make European football, not only Champions League, but like to make the Europas for Chelsea. So no, I did not think this was a good season. There was not even a moment. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but since what, week 4, were they ever really going to make the Champions League? No. So, you know, if you're Chelsea, if you spend that amount of money, you have those names, you have that fan base in London, one of the best fan bases, in my opinion. And, you know, the coaching ability that you do where you're going through phenomenal coach, world-class name coach after another, you should at least be scaring the top 4 into getting into the Champions League. So I thought this was a massive, colossal failure of a season. They blew through their entire purse. They're going to get hit for FFP regulations eventually because of it. I'm sure of this. And I thought this was a big old fucking fail. But you know what? Congratulations for winning your last 5. I think that shows some heart. I think Cole Palmer was a big spark on that team. I think Nico Jackson should be playing in Division 7 football. And we'll go from there.
Okay, I think Kyle said everything that needs to be said about Chelsea there. Pretty harsh words for them. Definitely a disappointing season overall, but I think, again, some progress to build on. We'll see what Enzo Maresca can do. Moving on down to another team that actually just missed out on all European football, and that's Newcastle United. James, you have them at a B-, Kyle, B+. I had him at a C+. I had them finishing 6th in my predictions. It mostly was down to injury more than anything else. They created a ton of chances. They scored 85 goals, which was just 1 behind Liverpool, 6 behind Arsenal. So they certainly had the attack, but defensively, with the combination of injuries to the midfield defense and Nick Pope's shoulder injury, they just conceded way too many goals, got blown away a few different times throughout this season. So it's a disappointing year. We'll see what they do from an FFP standpoint. It doesn't look like they're going to have to sell Isak or Bruno G, but maybe some of their younger prospects will have to make way in order to comply with the rules. And another team that pipped them to Europe is Manchester United. They're always a hot button topic point. Kyle, you had them at the lowest grade of a D+. James and I both thought they would finish in top four. I had them at fourth, James at third. But Kyle, why don't you kick it off? What do you, you know, think about their season overall?
I thought they had a great season. I mean, with a couple hiccups here and there, I think their defense was really surprising for how bad it was, considering the level of defense that they were at last year. But to score 85 goals, there's not much to say about it. No one saw that coming. At least I definitely did not see Newcastle dropping 85 goals. And they are the final team that is plus in the goal differential column. So good for them. I thought it was a very big, I don't want to say very big success for a season, because they let up 62 goals, which if you look back to last year is just unbelievable considering.
Almost double.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was at least a decent enough season. We had them ranked pretty much similarly all as a C halfway through the season. And they kind of stated it's one of those teams that any team playing Newcastle is worried for. But by the end of the season, even if you're bottom half of the table, you're still not, too upset you're playing Newcastle. It's like, all right, this is an opportunity. Whereas last year it was, fuck me, we're playing Newcastle once again. So I think they deserve to not be in European football. I think they have a lot of work to do, but not the worst season overall.
Yeah. I think just going off of that, one of the big differences is that, St. James's Park was such a big place for them last year, and they weren't quite as much of a fortress this year. It was still good, but they were tied for fifth place with Aston Villa in terms of home performance. So I think that's the big area for improvement and likely to bounce back on. And then James, I'll just skip over Newcastle for you and just have you run with Manchester United. You gave them a C-, but you, like I said before, you had them in top four, going into the year. So it's a disappointing year, right?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of alluded to it when we were talking about Newcastle, but Manchester United had 45 separate injuries, which was the most out of any team out there. You had Chelsea at 43 and Newcastle at 41. Newcastle had over 1,950 accumulated days lost, which is why we saw a lot of that in that. But I think Man U, for having what they had, I would agree that is exactly why I had them at the rating the same way. They salvaged something out of nothing. I know we'll talk more about it when Brendan's on the line as well. But I think, they found a new star in Kobbie Mainoo. And I think, they have Garnacho to ride his coattails moving forward as well. So there's some bright spots. I actually had Diego Dalot as one of the players of the season in my books over at what is he, left back or right back? I think he's a right back.
He played both of Shaw's injury, but he's a right back by trade. He's right footed.
Yep. And I thought he was phenomenal. It will be very interesting to see him play in the Euros with Portugal this summer. I think there were some bright spots for Manchester United. I think they got a lot of shit for having a lot of injuries, but I would agree with you for sure. It's the FA Cup saved their rating for me.
Y'all are nice. I mean, that's so generous. I have been watching soccer my entire life. Have you guys ever seen Manchester United have a season with a negative goal differential?
No, I don't think we have.
No, yeah. No. This was the biggest fail I've ever seen from this club. It was embarrassing in my opinion. They're lucky to get a D+. The only reason they're not at the bottom of the tier list is the fact that they won the FA Cup. So this season is a huge success for them. They got a trophy, which two clubs can say in the Premier League at this point for this season?
Three. We won the Carabao Cup.
True. So you can't dog them. You cannot give them an F for that, but this was embarrassing for you are Manchester fucking United. People who don't watch this sport of football know who Manchester United is. Big old embarrassment.
I think whatever coach is next in Manchester United might clip Kyle's talk right there.
Bro, James, that for motivation. James, you played soccer with my father as the coach. Would he not be better? Come on. Tom.
Coach Tom? Coach for Tom. Sure. Absolutely. Well, one team that I think I was one off on their placement. I had them finishing in 10th, and that's West Ham, another London team. I gave them the B overall because they kind of performed exactly how I anticipated them to perform. Kyle, you gave them a C+. And Sean, you gave them B+. Nothing really crazy to talk about the Hammers, in my opinion. I think the biggest star of the show was Jared Bowen, showed how phenomenal he is, as well as Mohamed Kudus, a great addition. It will be interesting to see where Lucas Paqueta ends up, whether that is with Man City or whether that's on the
prison. Pine.
Yeah, I was going to say, or in the brink. For those who don't know, he is currently going under litigation regarding match fixing, in the sense that he told a bunch of, apparently they call it Paquetá Island, wherever he is from, that he told a bunch of his family and or friends that to bet him to have a yellow card in continuous matches. So he's getting tagged for that. But overall for the Hammers, a pretty average performance. Kyle, you have them as a C+. Sean, you have a B-. So you guys are pretty close. Sean, what did you think about West Ham and why you gave them a B-?
Yeah, I think, overall, I had them in 13, so they did better than I thought they would. They fell off definitely, though, after the halfway point. I think they were pretty much in Europe for the entirety of 2023, but just kind of fell off. Not good enough in terms of defensively. I felt like they conceded too many goals with 74 on the season. Like, that's borderline. Yeah. I mean, you look down, that's the most outside of the relegation zone. So that really is an area that needs to be worked on next year. But still a good season. I think, like you said, kudos. They absolutely nailed that one. They did well with Ward-Prowse. And I also like the additions of Alvarez, but I think center back now is definitely the area. Center back and striker need to be upgraded. Moving across London from the east side down to the southwest, Crystal Palace. Death taxes in Crystal Palace, finishing in 12th. No longer. They finished. which I actually predicted. This is one of the ones I got spot on. They were pretty uninspiring at the halfway point. Kyle, you had him at a C, and I think that was definitely warranted. They were probably even worse to watch. They were more like a D- to watch. But the sacking of Roy Hodgson and then Oliver Glasner coming in just totally revitalized them. They just took their game to another level under him. Jean-Philippe Mateta finished with 16 goals on the season. The vast majority of those goals came after...
Out of nowhere.
Right, and he was dominant. We obviously saw really good performances from Eze and Elise throughout this year when they were fit, both dealt with injury. And I read a stat earlier this week, in the last 3 years, when Eze's not fit, they win 9% of their games. And when he is fit, they win 40% of their games. So yep. It shows how valuable he is. Elise probably is even more important now. We'll see if they can hang on to them, but there's an opportunity to push on for them and potentially compete for a Europa League or Conference League spot if everything goes their way. James, you had them at a B. Kyle, you had them at a C+, and I had them at a B+. So, Kyle, I'll just give you the rebuttal here. Why do you have them outside of the Bs?
Before we get into that, Sean, quick question for you. Does this mean you're back as president of the Crystal Palace fan club?
Or you definitely back? Wouldn't describe myself as president. I said I did step down from Eze's fan base after he scored what basically killed Liverpool's season. But, they did it to themselves from there. So I am still a diehard Eze guy for sure.
You're on the board. You're just not running it.
Even after that final game they had, I mean, they had probably the greatest final game of any team in the Premier League. I mean, they were inspiring.
And listen, they made one of my few lock of the week wins when they absolutely drubbed Aston Villa 5-0. I did say I thought they were going to blow them out. I didn't think 5-0 was going to be the final, though. Definitely an exciting trio up top. And then moving to a team that's always exciting to watch and also has some managerial news with their manager, De Zerbi, leaving. We have Brighton and Hove Albion. And Kyle, I'll let you start with this one because you gave them a big old D.
Yeah, I'll keep giving them the big old D right now. I mean,
oh God.
God damn. This is just absurd. You are in 11th place. You're bottom half of the table as Brighton and Hove Albion. I mean, this is a team that, I'm not going to lie, I thought had a chance to place in the Champions League this year. I would have swapped them in Aston Villa. Like this, they do such good business. They have such a way about them. I mean, they have players that are just phenomenal that we reference every week we were talking about these guys. But I guess second half of the season, they just fell off. So yeah, in my opinion, they're a huge, huge failure for the season. I'm sure you'll come back and say, well, they made $200 million. I mean, good for them. Well, good for them. Bottom half of the table.
of course they did. I mean, they did. So, I think it was like 135 or it was something. It was in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And they were the only team that really, other than I think technically Everton was in the green because of financial fair play, but they outperformed in the market, but they underperformed on the field. And mainly, and you know, it's an excuse that a lot of players are playing more and more soccer, football every year. Brighton were hit with quite the injury bug as well. They had 41 separate injuries in the league as well, which is the same amount as Newcastle that we were just giving a little bit of slack for as well. They had 21 players injured, individual players, 21 individual players injured, which is insane. And a lot of it was Mitoma and Seso. They got rid of McAllister. They didn't get rid of him. They sold McAllister and they sold Enzo Fernandez over. Caicedo over the summer. So they lost their two stars. And then everyone else who was going to pick up the slack got injured. So a very difficult and frustrating season.
I think Mitoma, that's a name that, I mean, did a week go by that we weren't referencing Mitoma in the first 12 weeks of the season?
Yeah, but he got injured.
Or last year even.
And that's what I'm saying. He missed half the game.
You know, I think it's poor decisions. Like, you know what? Jump over the slide tackle. Don't get injured. You know, be smart.
Oh, yeah. It's his fault. But also, you know, I'll go to bat for Brighton because we were big Brighton boys last year. But look at 2021-2022 season. They were in ninth place. We weren't up Brighton, you know, thinking that they're all that amazing the year before that either. And then 2020-2021, that's when they joined the Premier League and they finished in 16th. So they've had such a rise over the past couple of seasons to where they are right now. Actually, no, it looks like they joined in, what was it, 2019-2020?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I'm only giving them the D rating in my opinion, potential. I mean, this is a team that should not be in the bottom half of the table. Bottom line.
I think like James referenced, they were not able to overcome the sales of McAllister and Caicedo. Understandable when you lose two quality midfielders. They were so crucial to them getting Europe the year before. Yeah. But, you know, we move from a team that you love talking about, Kyle, to a team that you absolutely hated this time last year. And that was the Bournemouth Cherries. And what a season they had. Their best season ever in the Premier League in terms of point totals. They finished 12th, a team that I had in 14th. James, you had in 15th. They ended the season in 12th, like we said. Really good season. Kyle, you even gave them a B, which that says a lot. When you can put past your absolute
man, I wanted to give him an A. I wanted to give him an A. I would have given them an A, but if you remember last season, there was a 9-0 defeat.
We gotta get over this. All right, we're gonna get over this.
No, no, but in all seriousness, I thought they played fantastic this year. We had them at a B plus halfway through. They finished, as Sean said, best they've ever finished, and their goal differential at -7. That's got to be a win for them. I thought it was a great season. It's just, it's hard to give a team higher than a B when you finish 12th.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's fair. But if you're looking at where at the beginning of the season where we expected them to finish, and they're finishing better than that, I think that's something to say on its own. And then, of course, you have Dominic Solanke, who is putting up Haaland-esque numbers with 19 goals. You know, you had Cole Palmer just higher than him, and Isak, who I think is one of the most clinical finishers in the league with 21 and 22 respectively. I mean, this guy really had a breakout year, ex-Liverpool boy as well, Sean. So I know you enjoy seeing him perform relatively well. And then you just got to give it to the Cherries, because in 2021-2022, they were in the championship. And the year before that, they were in the championship as well. So a really impressive turnaround for them. I think it overall, B+ and Sean and A-, I think are very fair points of judgment for the Cherries.
Absolutely. And then, you know, we move down to from the South Coast up to London, Fulham. Kyle, I'll have you just kick it off here. You give them a C-. You had them at the lowest grade out of anybody. They finished basically around where James and I thought they would. James, you had them finishing in 14th place. They finished one spot ahead of that in 13th. I had them in 12th, so they split the difference. But Kyle, throw it to you first. Why do you have them at a C-?
Honestly, it's a lot of big names. I thought they'd be a lot better. You have Willian on the squad. You didn't play that well. You let up 67 goals. I'm sorry, no, 61 goals. 61 goals on the season. It's a lot of goals to let up. They did lose their number one striker to Saudi Arabia, which is tough. There's nothing you can do about that at that point. Or, don't forget, he did go to Saudi.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, it is a tough comeback season. But you got plays like Joao Polinha, who in the first half of the season was electric. There was no player better winning tackles, stuff like that. And they kind of were just lackluster, in my opinion. They didn't really win a lot of games I thought they would win. They had a lot of draws against teams that I thought, you know, you have to rely on 3 points against the bottom tier teams, and they were drawing them. So there was a lot of missed opportunities, in my opinion. They didn't play poorly. And keep in mind, I'm going off of a C as average. So when I rank teams a C minus, I'm going, you're a tiny, tiny bit just below average of what I thought you'd be. It's not a dog. You know, if I could get dog, give me B's throughout college, I'm a happy man. You know what I mean? So I just wish they played a little bit better this season. I'm glad they're still in the Prem. There was always a moment where, you know, you lose a lot of players and there's always that scare, but they'll be back next season. And I fully expect them to finish better next season.
Well, I think next season will be heavily weighted on if Joao Polinha is able to stay at Fulham. I think right now he's linked to Bayern Munich, which would be quite a bit of an upgrade for him, and a bit of a bummer if you're a Fulham fan. You don't want to be losing one of your best players, and when you have to try to find more attacking prowess, you don't want to have to worry about filling the backfield as well. But I think they lost the season with their lack of goals there, Sean. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think there wasn't anybody that really stepped up. There was a hot streak for Rodrigo Muniz. I think he scored maybe 6 and 7 or something like that. But just overall, the distribution of goal scorers, only Newcastle had more total goal scorers than Fulham this year with 17, but it's mostly just guys around 4 or 5 goals. Muniz has the most with 9, the next is at 7, and then it just falls off, and there's a ton of guys at, you know, 3, 4, and 5 goals. I think that's got to improve. Obviously, either Muniz, who's I think 22 or 23, maybe getting him a partner or getting better contribution from the wings. But that'll definitely offset, you know, the defensive issues that they have. They did lose Tosin Adebayo, who was a crucial player for them defensively. He's gone as a free agent to Chelsea. So I think that certainly will hurt, and they need to address their defense. That's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, there'll be one clawing back. One team that absolutely clawed out of my bottom three into what I thought was one of the best performances of the season relative to where I had them initially placed, and I'm slightly embarrassed to say that I had them placed in 19th and being relegated, but that is the Wolves. I'm sure our boy and your boy specifically, Nick, is very excited about that. But Wolverhampton Wanderers, I gave them an A. I cannot give them an A because I had them so low. They sold off all their assets. They actually were in the green this summer in the transfer windows as well. And I remember during that review, I said, if they're able to maintain Premier League status, I will say this is one of the best seasons that they could have. And they did it. And they did it with some good coverage. They finished 20 points higher than the relegation zone. So they did it with a lot of comfortability, and they have some money that they go into the market with over the summer. So maybe that was their game plan all along. But the Wolves, I gave them an A. Kyle, you gave them a C. And Sean, you were a little bit closer to me with a B+. So Sean, why would you give the Wolves the B+? I think it's probably more realistic that that's the situation that we're living in.
I think Gary O'Neill deserves a lot of credit once again, just like we gave him credit last year when he was at Bournemouth keeping them up. I think he's done a great job. His teams are always really well organized. They're great on the counterattack. They're dangerous at set pieces. All the things that you would say about a good coach who's at the bottom half of, you know, coaching in the bottom half of the Premier League, he does those things well. You know, Matheus Cunha and Hwang Hee-chan both had breakout seasons for him, and that's a big, big reason why, you know, they did end up staying up. They did get a little bit of fortune. They should be at least one spot lower. You know, Everton lost 8 points over the course of the year. So realistically, they would have finished in 15th. I had them in 16th going into the season, like we talked about. Did not like their summer, but it worked out for them. And they ended up having a pretty strong season. Started the season better. They tailed off toward the end, but like you said, the goal was just to stay up.
Kyle, your jaw hit the floor when I said closer to a B+A position. You have them as a C. Is that just because you expected better, or because where you had them at halfway hopes and horrors, you had them as an A-, and like Sean said, they tailed off at the end there?
I would say a little bit of both, if we're being honest. So they get into the Premier League. They get the call up in 2018. Since they got the call up, this is their worst finish. period. They finished 7th, 7th, 13th, 10th, and 13th. And now they're just finishing bottom half of the table, 14th. So I think this was a colossal failure. This is a team that can beat any team in the Premier League. They proved it by beating Man City in their first matchup at Man City. So I expected a lot more, and I watched that game, you know, with a lot of heart, as I always do, because that's the only way to watch football. But they outplayed it, you know, like they're capitalizing on counters, they're playing their game, and they're having fun. And to finish 14th after a season like that, I feel like the Wolverhampton Wanderers aren't a team that we should be saying, you know, good for them, they stayed up in the Premier League. This is a team that, since they've gotten the call up in six seasons, half of the time have finished in the top half of the table. So they have the names, they have the striking power. I'm a little disappointed.
Fair. That's fair. I think when you look at it as a longevity deal, I think that's very fair. I think it will be exciting to see what they do over the summer. Another team that we were all over the place with grades on this one, and it's mainly because of me, but I have Everton here, obviously avoiding relegation for the third straight season. This, in spite of that 8-point deduction that, Sean, you were just talking about, they finished in 15th place with 40 points. It definitely does help when your bottom three are piss poor participants in the Premier League. Try to say that five times fast. But Everton did what they needed to do to stay above water here. And I have them as an A-, mainly because of that incredible, incredible streak that they had towards the end of the season, where they had multiple shutouts that really sealed the deal. I think they had, starting back in April 6th, they shut out Burnley. They had one hiccup against Chelsea, but then they had 1, 2, 3, 4 clean sheets out of the last 8 or 7 games to end the season on a high note for Everton. We always knew that they would give a fight. So I think the Toffees, for me, get an A-. Sean, you have them as a B. Kyle, you are in between two worlds here with a C+, B-. I think, Kyle, I'll pass it off to you first here. What about the Toffees that you're kind of on the fence about?
Listen, I agree with you. They had a great season, A-, B+, whatever. But at the end of the day, how dare you cheat? You know, there's no tolerance for cheaters in the Premier League. So you're getting dogged a full grade letter. There's no tolerance. I won't stand for it. Absolutely not. FFP is there for a reason.
Well, with the and Sean, I'll pass it right to you after this, but with the 8-point deduction, it is their highest finish out of the last three seasons. So there is that upward trend for them. What do you think?
Oh, good for them. Highest finish? 15th?
In the past 3 years.
Yeah, that's a big improvement, cheaters.
Yeah. Listen, it's going to come down to what they can do in the summer. I think they'll still be up against it with FFP. They didn't really hit. You know, if you look at the guys they brought in last summer, they weren't the guys that kept them up by any means. You know, the reemergence of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, him having a good season, leading them in goals was big. Abdoulaye Doucouré coming in, he had a really good start to the season. But then they just found goals from, you know, throughout the lineup, but really not from their big money moves. Like Beto only had 3 goals as a striker that they brought in. I think they need to basically nail their summer to take a step forward. Otherwise, I think they'll probably be in the 12 to 14, 15 range again. But they seem to be very stable under Sean Dyche, which is not something we could say about Everton in a long time. I thought they were going to go down. I thought, you know, with the fact that they had to make sales before the deadline, and then also the fact that they just really struggled to stay up the previous two seasons, I thought this was going to be the year they went down. But Sean Dyche, like I said, and you talked about, has them in a really good form defensively. So I'm sure Gareth Southgate is very happy about that his goalie comes into the Euros in great form and with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. One team that I think we all agreed absolutely shit the bed towards the end of the season here, which was a shocker. I think in the halfway hopes and horrors, we had them, predicted to be one of the better teams. At least I did, for sure. I had Villa underperforming and I had Brentford overperforming, which turns out flip-flopped. Villa had a very difficult end of the season schedule that they performed very well. Brentford didn't have that difficult of a season on the second half or in the run-in, rather. And they had one Ivan Toney back, and they still barely survived here. I have them as a D-. Kyle, you have them as a straight-up F. And then Sean, you have them as a D as well. So I had them finishing in 12th. Sean, this was one of your furthest off based estimate. You had them at 11th. You want to talk about them?
Yeah, I just expected them to have a better season, specifically guys like Mbeumo. I know he did start the season really well, but then he got injured. He missed part of the season with AFCON duty as well. We did see the emergence of Yohan Wiese, which was good. Tony came back and looked like himself for a little bit, but didn't really contribute to the level we thought. He still played almost half the season, only had 6 goal contributions. The shithouse extraordinaire, Neil Mope, had a good season. But yeah, like you said, I was most off base with this one. I gave him a D. You have him a D minus. Kyle, F. Just a bad season for them overall. Basically, to stay up, for the most part, you need to be around 36 points. They got 39, so that was good. But it's not what we expect, have come to expect from Brentford. They've certainly increased expectations with how they performed over the previous 2 seasons in the Premier League. So I would say this is a disappointing one, but they have the opportunity definitely to take a step forward under Thomas Frank next year.
Yep. Kyle, I know you have them as an F. Is there any reason in particular other than the fact that you had them at an F at halfway hopes and horrors? They did not change your opinion at all in the second half of the season here?
No, I mean, that's exactly it. You guys both touched upon it. This is a team that in previous, I don't want to say seasons because we've been doing this for 2 years, but, last year we were kind of thinking they might make Europa. This is a team that has some caliber players. And granted, they had the Ivan Toney incident, but goddamn, there's no world that Brentford should be finishing in 16th place in the Premier League. So I genuinely think that this is a team that next season, with a good offseason, a good amount of coaching, good training, go play some golf, relax. But they should be top 10. They genuinely should be, in my opinion. There are teams in the top 10 that I think they can overtake. For example, West Ham United, Manchester United, the fucking way they've been playing. But, it's Brentford. These are the bees. They be buzzing. They got the colors. They got the fan base. They got it all. So I genuinely think they should be. There shouldn't be a world where we're questioning whether or not they're going to stay in the Premier League. And the fact that we had a genuine argument for that come week 32, that's a problem.
Yeah, I think it's, what is it? They're only their third consecutive season now in the Premier League. They came up, I think, a couple years ago. Yeah, they came up in 2021, 2022. Other than that, they hadn't been in the Premier League since well before 2010, 2011, where they were actually in League One. But with that being said, a team that is on the flip side to an F here that you actually have the highest rating for, Kyle, is Nottingham Forest. Now, I don't want to say that Sean and I nailed this.
Really?
You have them as a B minus, and then Sean and I have a C plus. Sean and I both had them finishing in 17th place at the beginning of the season. That was obviously before they received a point deduction themselves. But based off of this logic, how are you feeling with the trees here?
I mean, good for them. Good for them. They beat a lot of teams I didn't think they'd beat. And I gave them a B minus because they're staying in the Premier League. That's as simple as that. They did their job. They were clearly not going to make top half of the table. And I thought if any team would overtake them, it would be Luton Town. So I think Nottingham Forest is genuinely lucky that Luton started the season without a stadium. Because I mean, if they started the way they should and they were on their war path that they've been on, I think they would be swapped right now. I think Nottingham would be going down and Luton would be staying up. So B minus, they stayed up. They did their job.
Sean, I'm going to say one person's name. I want your first reaction, verbal, noise, whatever you said. When I say Chris Wood, you say,
I really don't even know what to say about Chris Wood anymore. He finishes the season with 14 goals. He started it off really, really slow. He didn't score until week 9, but then he scored 2 in that game. And then he just turned into like a supernova for different stretches of this season. He scored a game against Newcastle United. He had a hat trick. He had multiple braces. He ended the season with a brace. But then there was also several games that they could have clinched staying up earlier. And he just was a disaster with missing big chances. So it goes both ways with him. And I think that's, they're kind of indicative of their season overall. there's definitely a lot of talent on this roster, particularly in attacking areas with Gibbs White, Alanga, and then Hudson Adoy, those three. And then, you know, Awoni, when he's fit and firing, he wasn't for large chunks of this year. He missed a lot of time due to injury. So he only made 12 starts and played just over 1,000 minutes. So certainly not a great season for them. And I think, you know, next year they might be in trouble because I expect all three of the promoted teams to be a bit stronger and break that 30-point threshold. But yeah, they do stay up. They live to fight another day. And this is the last of the positions I got nailed on. So I got five correct with City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Palace, and now Forest. But let's move into the relegation zone and start it off with our boys, who we like the most. Luton Town, they became this year's Brighton. Everybody liked them. We, you know, love seeing the scenes at Kenilworth Road. We got what I predicted in the preview episode, that they would upset, you know, a top half team. They beat Newcastle United. They took points off of Liverpool. Good season for them overall, but as we expected, they did go down, finishing in 18th place. Kyle, you are the harshest, shocking, I know, with a D plus. Give me a reason. Is it just because they got relegated? Like, you can't give them a good grade?
I mean, how could you? How could you look at this season and say that it was a success? You're going to hell
expectations.
Back down.
Expectations. You had them as an A plus at the halfway point. You had them at an A plus. I mean,
they were playing some great football. Some great
but
football.
They were in the relegation zone.
And they stayed there. That's where it's
and
at.
And they stayed there.
I mean, but that's the thing.
You said it before, man.
The hands
you said
go, whoa.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, I'll explain. They started the season without a stadium.
So yeah, you said it 2 seconds ago.
I would expect them to have a better second half of the season when they have a stadium and they have the fan base and people are vibing. So, you know, they were in 18th place halfway through. They started way worse. They were on a path up. They actually got out of the relegation zone at one point, and now they're back in it. So to call the season a success would be a long shot. I mean,
but it's what we expected.
It is better than what we expected. D plus because is not the worst grade. I've gotten many of those back in my day. So you know what? It's go back down. You have your stadium now. Go win the league and come back and show us what you can do. Because I genuinely think Luton Town, I gave them a D plus because I expected them to stick around. That's it. My expectations were higher. And to give a team that is no longer going to be in the Premier League a passing grade is tough for me. That's the only reason I'm doing it. But I thought out of all the teams that got relegated, like you'll hear my rankings for the other two that are getting relegated. They're not a D plus. I'll tell you that. This is as good as I could give them. And I genuinely hope to see them again next year. Cause as Sean said, it was a lot of fun watching them at Kenilworth Lane. It was, it truly was.
Yep.
And Kenilworth Road, both those places.
Oh, both of them. Yeah. I mean, they play at two stadiums. Unbelievable. The same time.
they gave us some of the most entertaining games, which is why I gave them the A/B-, but agreed. They go 100%. Down. It's a bummer. But a team that that we two of us gave non-letter grades. Sean and I gave Burnley G's. And Kyle, you gave them an F plus. I only assume that it was an F plus because it was coached by Vincent Kompany, who now somehow a team that got a rating of a 2 G's and an F plus is now coaching Bayern Munich. But yes, they
you're absolutely right. You're 100%
they were on. It was horrible. It was horrible. They were my furthest off, I think. I had them finishing in 11th because maybe I gave Vincent Kompany a little bit too much credit. And then, of course, how dominant they were in the championship. I thought it would somehow transfer into the Premier League, but not even remotely close. Sean, Burnley, man, what are we supposed to do with this other than sell them for spare parts?
Yeah, disappointing season for sure. I think we got a little too wrapped up in what they did in the championship and disregarded the fact that two of their biggest players were on loan and they did not retain them. Disappointing and kind of like we touched upon when he talked about him getting hired by Bayern Munich. Kompany was totally kind of unwilling to change his tactics or his principles, and basically they accepted relegation without much of a fight. They drew a bunch of games towards the end of the season to make look like they might have a chance, but again, just not winning enough games really made the difference for them. You know, they didn't really have any consistent goal scoring throughout the year. The team we're about to, you know, touch on, Sheffield United, scored less than them. even Luton Town scored 11 more goals than them this year. So pretty poor season overall. Bruun Larsson, their top scorer. But I gave him an F, like you said, or G. I guess we went even below F. So did you, James. But a team that really deserves it is Sheffield United. Yep. You picked him to finish 20th. I picked him to finish 20th. Their mothers picked them to finish 20th, and they didn't disappoint, or they did disappoint, because they were really, really poor, allowing over 100 goals on the season. Yeah. Pretty insane when you think about it, but not a surprise. I think we talked about it from the very beginning, them selling Sander Berg to Burnley and Iliman Ndiaye to Marseille. Their two best players in their promotion season were going to cost them. And they certainly did. It didn't matter whether it was Danny Higginbotham or it was Chris Higginbotham or Chris Wilder. They just didn't have it, didn't have the horses, and they are down in the championship. I think there's multiple teams in the championship that would have worked them.
Yeah, 100%.
This season.
100%. I mean, the only benefit that we can give Sheffield is that they finished the season with negative 69 goal difference, and it's just strictly due to the number. That's quite literally it. Everything else is just really piss poor. Kyle, you had them as an F minus. I don't think there's much that need to be said about this. I don't even think the parachute payments will be able to help them out on this one, but we will see.
I would like to say one thing really quickly about Sheffield United. How dare you let up more than 100 goals in a Premier League season? I mean, you stand alone. Not even no one even let up 90. To let up 104, I mean, fire them all. Clean house. Goddamn. Get Valderrama from Backyard Soccer on that field. Jesus.
Dissolve the team. Dissolve them all. But congratulations, gentlemen. Another successful year, another successful report card, some more grades giving out to us. I hope that sometimes we are more tender and caring and forgiving than our ex middle school teachers, but sometimes I kind of understand where they came from, because when something is bad, it's bad, and you just got to tell how it is. So hopefully for all you listeners out there, we did your team justice, or you are stand by our rating. If not, please let us know. We'll be here for the next couple of weeks, get into the season, but we're going to be here for a couple next weeks because of something that's really exciting that's happening this summer in two locations. Sean, you are participating in one. I am participating in the other. Why don't we go ahead and let's kick it off with the Copa Americas. Let's start next Thursday with Argentina, Canada at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. And I think a little bird is going to be there, right?
Yeah, definitely be on the lookout on the Instagram, EPL State of Mind Instagram page. I will be in attendance. I'll be filming some content. I'm so excited to see Messi in person. Copa America hosted in the United States for the first time. It's a great tournament. The intensity, particularly that the South American teams play with, it's awesome. It's the first time that it's a 16-team tournament. Usually they have much smaller groups. Sometimes it's just the 8 teams. Sometimes they invite one or two. But this is 16, top two teams in every group advance. The quarterfinals onwards are going to be phenomenal. The United States, will see, they're in a group with Bolivia, Panama, and then Uruguay. So that'll be a tough test, but certainly going to be an exciting game. They did just get worked by Colombia last night, but hopefully they can bounce back. And then going over to the Euros, which starts this week, and you'll be in attendance for. So why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, absolutely. Another really exciting tournament. It is deemed the second greatest soccer tournament in the world, only to one behind the World Cup. If you guys aren't aware, these tournaments typically happen like a winter summer Olympics, where the World Cup is every 4 years. This is every 4 years, and there's only a 2 year gap in between. This year it's being hosted in Germany, and I will be participating in a round of 16 knockout game. I won't be playing it, obviously, but I will be partaking in the watching of it. The winner of Group F, which is comprised of Portugal. So I'm hoping to see Ronaldo participate in his last Euros. And I will be facing whoever wins that group will be facing the third place group, I believe, in A, B, C, D, or E. But we do have a really intense groups in a lot of these. Obviously, you have the big names like Spain in here. You have Germany in here. They're hosting, obviously, but they're one of the favorites to win. I believe the favorites to win this season by the book is technically England, followed by France, and even Portugal gives a good running in there. But in Portugal's group, Group F, you have Turkey, Georgia, Portugal, and Czech. So I'm going to see the round of 16 in Frankfurt, and I'm hoping that we will see Portugal win that group so we can see him play against a third-place team in one of the higher groups upstairs.
Yeah, and I would also just like to finish off by giving you guys a very feel-good story. A certain Claudio Ranieri. Ranieri, Sean, you must know the guy. He's a coach. But gentlemen and ladies and all of our listeners, 2 years ago, Claudio Ranieri received an offer worth millions of dollars from the Arabian Gulf, but he also received a call from the president of Cagliari. That's the city he grew up as a young man and where he started coaching. He rejected every single offer he got other than the Cagliari offer, got paid a modest wage, and somehow qualified for Serie A. He brought their team to the top level, and several days ago, he just defeated Sassuolo and kept the team in Serie A. He announced his retirement a day afterwards. I mean, you cannot be more for the boys, for the team. Talk about heart. Talk about a feel-good story. Talk about smiling when you fall asleep. This man is an absolute legend of the sport, and he is the definition of love. Love over money. And that's where this sport's going. I just wanted to say it. It had to be said. God damn it, I love that man.
Where the fuck did this come from, Kyle? Did it just pop up on your newsfeed like 2 seconds ago?
This is just a goodbye. No, this is just
a goodbye. Yeah,
thank you so much.
He won the league with Leicester, man. He's a legend. He deserves it.
I mean, this is a Premier League icon. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he's retired. He retired a couple weeks ago, and we'll no longer hear his name, but it has to be said. And if we're closing off the season, we're going to close out his legacy.
Fair enough. I think that was just to divert the fact that Sean is going to a different state for international play. I'm going to
a very good point, James. Manchester City won the Premier League. Guys, I mean.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Unbelievable. Okay.
All right. This is it. It's the sign off. Don't miss out on the future episodes coming down the line. We will also have our near and dear friend Brendan Heasley back on the radio with us on the podcast to talk about that spotlight of Manchester United. We're also going to try to convince Blake Pirtle, U.S. men's national team and Philadelphia Union aficionado, to come in and talk about the Copa America, have a little bit of a highlight of that for everybody. And we have a lot of fun, exciting things happening on the summer. We kind of talked about that. The transfer window doesn't open up for another 4 days, I believe. But there is sort of a first primary deadline on June 30th that teams are must, if they're in financial fair play danger, sell a player or two before June 30th. So it's going to act as like a first deadline day. So expect a lot of activity around there. Other than that, with all the European and international play this summer, we probably won't see a lot of action till afterwards. But until then and until next week, myself, Sean, Kyle, we thank you guys for staying with us for the entirety of the season, giving us some support. The shout outs, the involvement, the comments, and a lot of love goes to us, to you guys. So thank you very much. And until next week, you enjoy the rest of your evening and best of luck.